The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
It's Friday night. Friday night. Already, and we are looking at one more Friday, and February is gone. As I said yesterday, I think it was yesterday, January, February gone, 10 months left. Watch how fast it goes. Watch how grueling and rugged this is going to be. There are all kinds of reasons to suspect that anything can happen. And anything is happening. There is so much artifice, so much deception, so much chicanery, and I'm talking about the kind that is fatal to people. People are dying all over the place. The game players are up to their eyeballs in intrigue, and it's all about greed. That's what it's about. Who's not saying anything about ISIS? Don't forget that wonderful little democracy in the Middle East. Israel, saying nothing about ISIS. And if ISIS were legit, it would be aimed full bore on the Zionist, racist, apartheid state of Israel, which continues to steal Palestinian land and flatten thousands upon thousands of Palestinian homes. Now, wouldn't ISIS, some sort of Muslim savior movement, do something to try to protect or otherwise intercede on behalf of fellow Muslims? You'd kind of think, wouldn't you? But that's not what ISIS is all about. ISIS is a contrived geopolitical force which is doing exactly what it's supposed to do, scare the living daylights out of people and try to continue the overthrow of not only Bashar al-Assad in Syria, but what's left of the Iraqi government, to set up their caliphate in the greater Middle East. This is what Israel is behind. They're involved with it, up to their eyeballs, believe it. Anyway, there's a lot going on here. What I do on various nights is have wonderful people come back every month. Harry Cooper is on tonight. Harry is an historian's historian. He runs sharkhunters.com. If you haven't been there, click on Harry's name. By all means, go. It presents World War II like you have never seen it. I.e., it presents the truth about World War II. His books are extraordinary. Hitler in Argentina is, it would be a bestseller if it were legitimately published at high-level publishing companies, but they won't dare touch it because that's not the, it's not the standard operating procedure for those people who are basically charged with continuing to maintain the lie about World War II from A to Z. Hello, Harry, and welcome back.
Good evening. I'm flattered. All those nice words. Thank you.
I have no idea what I just said.
We'll listen to it on the rerun.
Okay.
I'm staying alive. It's fighting this doggone cold, but I think I'm pretty well over it.
Well,
we're
going to send you home a little early tonight, 1 hour, and so you can get some sleep. And
I appreciate that. But like I promised you in the emails, a month from now I'll have some really rocking history to tell you.
Well, we'd love to debut it right here, as we have so many other things courtesy of you and your wonderful group there and all of your members. And we've taken so many patrols and trips with Harry. We've gone places. We've had just a ball looking at pictures now and pictures of then, and really getting a chance to relive World War history as it really happened. And I'm very much indebted to Harry and what he has done on behalf of all of us who care about reality. The truth is corrupted and perverted most of the time now, so we call it reality around here. And what we got up for you this hour, if you go to Guests at Rents, which is your website, look underneath Harry Cooper's name, World War II Truth, and you can see the unknown Adolf Hitler photos and the paintings of Adolf Hitler. We're going to take a look at some of those, and I'll tell you a little story about my Adolf Hitler paintings. And what I might do in April is put photocopies of my pictures up there and ask somebody out there, somebody knows where they are. They were stolen from me. And I'd like just to have somebody stand up and say, hell, I'll even buy it back. I just want one of them back. For history's sake, this is an historical piece that you just can't go down to Walmart and pick up. It's very unusual. Okay, my friend, what's new with you? Let's talk about shark hunters, what's happening. And we can't talk about what you're going out looking for here because it's top secret. I have an idea, but I'm not talking. And
right, because and even as you know, I can't even tell you on email or letter because you know we're not the only ones listening. But in about a month, I'm of course we'll preview it on your program. That you got my word on that.
Thank you.
We just got. I think I sent you an email and told you just this morning. I got another email from one of my agents about our book, Hitler in Argentina. You've read the book.
Yeah.
You know the name Willie Oberbeil.
Oh, yeah.
Willie
yeah.
Oberbeil.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, I got a 2-page-long email from Pizarro, my agent, who's on top of this thing.
Yeah.
And confirms and tells the entire history of Wilhelm Oberbeil from the time he was a young lieutenant in 1936 all the way on up to how he did indeed work with Don Angel Alcazar de Velasco, the guy who told us originally about Hitler's escape. He told me this in 1987.
Mm-hmm.
And we started proving little by little, and then in the last, 8, 9, 10 years, the proof has just come flooding in. And like I say, once you read the book and also see the proof that we have, nobody with half a brain would believe Hitler and Eva Braun committed suicide in the bunker, because faced with all the facts, it just overwhelming. I mean, there's no question. You read the book and you've seen.
No, there's no doubt. None.
No doubt.
No, this is just like the Holocaust. It's history is as perpetrated and perverted by those who would seek to corrupt it for their own ends. That's what they do.
Well, that's what I've heard. Yeah, I'm not an expert on what you just talked about, but and remember, I'm going over to Germany.
Yeah, of course. Understood.
Weeks.
I have my own opinions, and you have yours, and that's fine. And
exactly, and I have my opinion too, but I'm not going to say them on the radio, where I'm going to be met at the the airport by the Verfassungsschutz.
Well, we're listening to history through your and your work as we read it and making our own decisions. This is the best audience in talk radio, period. And even though they have been brainwashed their entire lives with the standard Zionist protocol and the big Hollywood movie industry, they are open-minded enough to entertain. You know, we don't expect everyone to agree with us. Never. We just ask them to think about things and re-examine them. That's all.
Yeah.
That's
you know, I'm older than you are. I'm older than anybody, practically. And I grew up with all this stuff, too, that Hitler started World War II, and the U-boat guys were all horrible, raving Nazis who machine-gunned people in the water, and they hated God. They prayed to Hitler. And we believed that all through the war years. We believed that all through my school years and everything. And even when I was bouncing around in the Bahamas on my boat with the three-girl crew, the good old memories, when I started learning about how the German U-boat...
I didn't hear any of that, by the way.
Well, my wife's in the other room.
Oh, all right.
No, she knew all about it, because she was the secretary at the marina where I lived on my boat later on. And
fortunately, you had strict cabin rules, and I understand.
Yeah, I don't know what the rules were, but...
Never mind.
Might have had some. But anyhow, that's when I first found out about the German U-boats in the waters over here. And, you know, my first thought was those dirty Nazis, because that's what we were told. They were all Nazis. And then, as you know, when I finally, one day I looked in my wallet, I had $5 left. So after 8 years of being a yacht bum, I had to swallow the anchor, as it's called,
mm-hmm.
and return to civilization, and went back to work. I was personnel director of a fair-sized company in Chicago at the time, and I started researching
mm-hmm.
and found that this was propaganda. This wasn't true. They didn't pray to Hitler and hate God. They were very religious, just
less,
like our
less
guys
than,
were.
Less than one person in the German military were affiliated with the party in any way.
Right, and in the German Navy, they were not allowed to belong until, July of 1944 with the Wolfschanz attack mm-hmm. on Hitler. Then they had to have a party guy on board. And after that, then they used the so-called Nazi salute, which was in reality is the Roman salute. But prior to that, they used the standard military salute. But like I say, when von Stauffenberg tried to blow him up, at that point they tightened up the rules, and for that matter, I think they realized by July of 1944, they realized that they were going to lose the war. As a matter of fact, a lot of the top military brass were talking about a negotiated surrender. I don't know whether Hitler was involved in that or not, but suddenly that idiot Roosevelt came out at the Yalta conference and
yeah.
said it had to be unconditional surrender.
So well, did Churchill, I think.
Was it Churchill? Okay, it was one of
yeah.
them. Those guys were, at least we know Stalin was a rotten bastard. The other two were supposed to think are wonderful people, but they aren't.
They were all, no one compares to Stalin, but the other two were certainly on the same side of the line.
Exactly. Nobody compares to Stalin, you're right, but at least we knew Stalin. We know now Stalin was a horrible guy. He was a butcher.
Yeah.
He had over 20 million of his own people.
Oh, more than that. He was inhuman. Just the worst.
And, you know, the old adage, if you live by the sword, you die by the sword, and he wound up loaded up his drink one night.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, those Russians, and I speak from experience. None of the stuff I say is theory or wild-eyed stuff. This is experience. Those Russian officers, when they get together to celebrate anything, it's a long, drunken party until they all pass out. Я вас почувствую русский подводник. I'm an honorary Russian submarine officer. And I've seen some of those parties with the admirals and stuff. And they're supposed to meet with us on a certain day. Well, sorry, they got drunk last night and they're still drunk. Well, they let Stalin keep drinking and Beria added a little something to Stalin's drink. And then mm-hmm. they left the room and told the sentries outside, Comrade Stalin is sleeping, don't disturb him. So when they finally found him the next morning, he had bloody froth all over his lips. Dead, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So, he got bumped off too. And when I was in the Red Army Museum, 1991, when I came over there on the invitation of Mikhail Gorbachev, my guide showed me this great big wall with 5x7 photos, hundreds of them, field marshals, generals, admirals. She pointed to about 6 of them and said these men were not killed in the Stalin purges. I said, do you mean? And that's all the farther I got. And she said, duh, all the rest. They were killed in Stalin purges. Which, you know, that's why his military was rather pitiful during the war, because he had all his professional soldiers bumped off. So, you know, they had a huge navy, they had a huge army, and that's what finally overwhelmed the Germans, was American manufacturing and the Russian ability to put cannon fodder out in the field.
Limitless human bodies thrown. The Germans literally, I've said this before, they could not kill the Russians fast enough to slow their advance. It
exactly.
was just that simple.
So, plus, you know, coupled with two of the worst winters back-to-back, two of the worst winters in a century.
Well, Hitler... Adolf Hitler preserved Europe for close to five more years, held off the Russian advance, which was all set to go within 2 weeks. Then he got wind of it and launched Operation Barbarossa and stopped the Russian attack on Europe. Stalin wanted to take Europe all the way to the English Channel and probably would have. He had all these, he had 2 million men, was it? I don't know how many.
He had a ton of people.
And they were all facing directly to the west, and they were going to roll right straight on through. Hitler surrounded them, cut them off, and took, I don't know, it took a million prisoners at least. But
yeah.
He saved Europe. People don't understand that. He
You're
saved Europe from Stalin's hideous purges, the gulags, the Bolshevik butchery, all of it.
Yeah,
Europe
but we're not,
would
we're
have
not
been,
supposed to know all that.
No, no.
So, but anyhow, we get off track here a little bit. You get my magazine, and I'll be sending it out to members over the weekend, I think. Page 31. It's all the stuff we got this morning from Pizarro.
Ah.
And it starts out with Don Angel had his first meeting with Lieutenant Wilhelm Oberbeil in 1934.
And well, they go way back. That's interesting.
And Oberbeil was selected for those tasks because he spoke Spanish without an accent. He could read, write, speak Spanish. So all the way through prior to the war,
mm-hmm.
From 34 until 39, Wilhelm Oberbeil worked in Argentina primarily for the Deutsche Bank, the German bank, which is still very big in Argentina. There's two huge banks there.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is Banco Alemán, Banco Transatlantico Alemán, which is the transatlantic German bank. And I've been in both of them just about a year ago when I was in Argentina last January
mm-hmm.
of 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, I was supposed to be in Argentina next month, but my translator, my guide, whatever you want to call him down there, suddenly decided that the agreed upon $150 a day Yankee money that I was going to pay him was not enough. And he sent me an email and said he and his girlfriend had just had a baby, their expenses were higher, and he demanded 280 Yankee dollars a day. So I emailed back and said, we Americans do not have the magic tree in our backyard that gives us $100 bills. So we agreed on 150 a day, and that's what it's going to be. He emailed back and said, well, he could accept 220 a day. I emailed back and said, nope, we made a deal. Just stick to the deal. And never heard from him again. And their economy is in free fall right now. Excuse me. So, 150 Yankee dollars per day to them is like 1,500 to 2,000 pesos a day.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes them just as long to earn a peso as it takes you and I to earn a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess you never heard the story of the goose that laid the golden egg. So I have a different translator who's going to go with me. I'm going back in July, excuse me, to meet with a bunch of the people who are still living and go to places that have historical impact, and that's about all I can say right now.
Very
that's,
good. All
that's
right.
In July,
mm-hmm.
which is the dead of winter down there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Although the places I'm going are far enough north to where it's pretty much like a Florida winter, so I can live with that. Except I don't think they have global warming down there.
God.
That's quite a joke.
Yeah.
So anyhow, like I have to.
Well,
mention,
they've got a big controversy now there with that the top prosecutor who was murdered.
I personally think that it's going to get pretty wild down there. I go there every year, and it's a beautiful country. I really like Argentina. Buenos Aires is the Paris of the South, and I always go to the Plaza de Mayo, which is this big plaza in front of the Casa Rosada, the Pink mm-hmm. House, which is mm-hmm. the seat of government. And it's a beautiful place. They got monuments, and they got all sorts of grassy areas and stuff like that. It's beautiful. When I was there last year, January 2014, holy cow, there were protesters all over the place. There was graffiti. Every bit of grass had a tent or a sign on it. There were people camping out. There were people complaining. I don't know who some of them were and what they were complaining about, but some of them were veterans of the Falkland Islands War, the Malvinas. But the Argentine military people who actually saw combat on the island, they get some kind of a pension. But these are the people who were not in combat but got pulled out of their homes and sent to the main naval base. I think it's named after General Belgrano. But that was the main naval base, and so they were down there as support troops, supply liaison, etc., during this war. Mm-hmm. Well, now they're screaming they want a pension, too. I don't know whether they should or should not get a pension, but too many people have their hand out for the government in too many countries, and the government doesn't have any money unless it takes it from the people who actually work. So, and now Argentina has also had a problem with they owed a massive amount of money to some Wall Street hedge fund and weren't able to pay it. And a high court in the United States said, tough bananas, you got to pay it. So there are
many people have
I don't even know the number. I think, you know, $75 billion is bouncing on the end of my memory here, but I don't know if that's accurate or not. But at any rate, they're in debt a huge amount. So the official rate of exchange for their peso went from 6 pesos to the U.S. dollar last January to now 8.6 pesos to the dollar. But on the street, you can get 15 pesos to the dollar because they're not supposed to have the Yankee dollars coming into the country. But if you bring them in, the guys on the street will be happy to change them for you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Hold on just a second. Going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Yes, sir.
With Harry Cooper in just a minute. Okay, welcome back. Harry, how much more of the really critical events of World War II are we going to find out about and have brought into focus, legitimate focus for us? Are you looking for any big events coming up soon? I know you're on the trail of one, but I mean in general.
Several.
Good. Okay. And these have the potential to really turn things around, I guess, in a much more honest direction than they are now.
Yeah. Well, a lot of the archives, I think in the U.S. archives, the National Archives in D.C. and also in Silver Spring, I think they are set to open up a lot of the files at 75 years after the war. That's 5 years from now. but, you know, all of a sudden, all these jackass Johnny-come-latelys, some of them have lifted pages from my book, et cetera. Now, all of a sudden, at least once a week, somebody sends me an email with an attachment. All sorts of FBI files are now available that show Hitler did indeed escape, and the FBI knew it.
Uh-huh.
Well, it was one of our guys, one of our members, who got those files, who found those files in the National Archives a few years ago and got them declassified. So, and we've got hundreds of FBI files here they all say the same thing, that they knew Hitler got away. They knew where he was. We have some files also from the CIA, which is actually the old OSS, say the same thing. But there are files in the British archives. Some of them have been sealed for 50 years, and then when they came up on the release date, they decided they'd keep them sealed for another 50 years. Some files are sealed forever. So you got to wonder what secrets are the Crown hiding. As one example, I think I mentioned it once before on your show, I remember Charles Higham, who was a world-renowned researcher, writer, well-respected because he was accurate.
I did read his book about Errol Flynn, claiming that Flynn was an agent of the German government. I rather doubt that. I think Charles went a little bit overboard on that. But, I mean, he may have been a sympathizer, as many were here, but I don't think he was an active agent.
Who knows?
Who knows?
I was there many years ago in Jamaica, talked to his widow, or his wife, whatever you want to call her, Miss Patricia.
Uh-huh.
She seemed to think he was, too. So, but at any rate, Higham was working on the story of Rudolf Hess. And, only an idiot would believe that he was just some nutcase, jumped into an airplane and decided to fly west. The same people that are dumb enough to believe that Lee Harvey Oswald had nothing better to do, so he took a shot at John F. Kennedy with a rifle that wasn't worth beans. So he was proving that Hess was sent on a peace mission by Hitler because Churchill had kept refusing all of Hitler's peace proposals.
That was Higham's work at Progress when he died.
Well, that was it. I talked to him one day because he was member number 34.
Oh.
We're up to member number almost 7,900. He was number 34.
Mm-hmm.
And I spoke with him on the phone, and he gave me all the scoop on that was going to prove that this was an official mission and that he was going to bail out over the estate of the Duke of something or another, cousin to the king, and get the peace proposal directly to the king and bypass Churchill, who wanted to keep the war going.
Churchill and his handler, Bernard Baruch, the Zionist Jewish billionaire, one of the richest men of the last century, who owned Churchill, lock, stock, and barrel, bailed him out twice in his life when he was bankrupt. So, that's where it went.
Yeah. So anyhow, when I was talking to Charles on the phone, he was telling me all that, and then he said his book was ready to go to the publisher. And just a couple of days later, he woke up dead, and all his material had vanished.
Really?
It doesn't pay to upset people.
That is a shame. That is a shame.
Yeah, unfortunately, when people start getting close to certain stories, big stories like that, they wind up dead. Patton kept asking what happened to the $2 billion worth of gold that evaporated out of the Reichsbank after the Allies overran Berlin, and he wound up dead.
For that and other reasons. Yeah.
Right. He also wanted to rearm the Waffen-SS and march east. And those who know he was assassinated think that is the biggest reason. But my opinion, that's one of the reasons. But the biggest reason is that he wanted to know what happened to
the gold. Interesting.
To the $2 billion worth of gold. Yeah, mm-hmm. You're not supposed to ask questions like that when the banks are running everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you see all this in our magazine, and if your listeners would like a copy of the magazine sent electronically, which is what most of our members get the magazine on the Internet, just send me an email at sharkhunters@earthlink.net. Say they heard this show and would like a comp copy, and bingo, it goes out the door to them.
The terrific magazine. Terrific.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Oh, yeah.
And as you know, and to dispel other rumors, this is not Harry Cooper's gold mine making a mint, because I don't take a salary. Nobody on our staff takes a salary. We've got translators and archivists and researchers, et cetera, et cetera. Nobody gets a dime in salary, and I was making between $3,000 and $4,000 per week as vice president of a big company in Chicago, and I just walked off it to do this because I love it. And most of the U-boat skippers that survived the war were all members of Shark Hunters and became good friends. And so we all do this for no salary at all. And the money that comes in from our book sales and our gift item sales, that all goes to keep Shark Hunters moving. And also our tours, our patrols. We're going to Germany in September. We're going to visit Oktoberfest. Everybody has to go to Oktoberfest once in their life. It's kind of a wild time. And we go to the Ulrich Memorial, where the old veterans, they remember everyone who fell in battle, no matter what uniform they wore, no matter what flag flew over them. They remember everybody.
Right.
And we spend a couple fellowship evenings with hundreds of veterans, mostly Waffen-SS, but also some Fallschirmjägers and some Luftwaffe guys and a handful of U-boat guys. And
It's an extraordinary trip. You folks, if you're thinking at all about going to Europe and have an interest in history, you could not possibly ever duplicate what Harry Cooper offers with these tours. They're extraordinary. Just a moment, and we'll come right back with Harry. Okay, back with Harry, talking about all kinds of things that are there if you want them. And if you don't want them, you don't want them. But I hope some of you will sign up for these wonderful tours and meet people and see things that are unfortunately, they're fading from our planet. And to talk to some of these veterans, what an amazing treat that would be. Doesn't matter what country they're from, but these people lived the greatest conflagration in World War history. And they know.
And now, they don't have any hostility toward the Americans.
No. Right. I've got underneath Harry Cooper and guests, there are a couple of links. One of them is about Adolf Hitler, the real Hitler. He was a real human being. He wasn't a monster. He actually slept at night. He was a vegan, vegetarian. He got up in the morning. He put his shoes on like everybody else. And he was a Christian. And I'm not saying he was the closest thing to God on the planet, but he was anything but the monster that the controlled, owned, and operated media makes him out to be. He loved the German people. He loved children. And his own personal assistant said over and over again, the only thing, the absolute thing he was obsessed with is that Germany never have to suffer again like it did after World War I, that the German people would be given their freedom and it would be guaranteed. And that was his driving motive.
Yep.
Did you see that interview? You're awfully busy. It was about 30 minutes long. His personal assistant for 6 years.
No, I missed that one.
Oh, my. Just referred to him as the boss. I'll send it to you. Like you
okay.
have time, but it's just extraordinary. He was interviewed right before he passed. I think he was 92 or something.
Okay. Like you say, when I have time, it's now coming up on 11 o'clock at night. I've been in my office since 4 this morning.
Yeah.
And that was late. As you know, I'm usually here by 3.
Well, you get to work when I'm still up. That's the funny part about it.
Yeah, I just don't have enough sense to go to bed. Now, actually, the work I do is so darn much fun. I love it, and I just don't know how to quit. And, you know, not to sound corny, but I think that's what God's keeping me alive for, to do this work.
Right. Well, thank goodness he is.
Yeah.
Or she is, or whoever.
I'm not getting into that one.
No.
But,
okay, so now, whatever happened to my little round object that I want to get?
I still have no idea. I can't find out what that thing was or what it was used for. And
is he still talking to you?
Well, he's still a member, but we don't talk about that orb anymore because he absolutely does not want to sell it. And that's the end of that story.
Huh. Oh, so he made up his mind he doesn't want to sell it. Okay.
To the best of my knowledge, he says, no, it's not going to be sold.
Mm-hmm. And no one knows what it is.
I've never found out what it was. It's just really a strange device.
Mm.
Fancy-looking little thing, and I can see why you like it, but what is it? What's it used for? I have no idea.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to get photocopies of the six pieces of art I had.
Okay.
And I'll put them up maybe next month and see if anybody out there, some of the collectors who do listen to the program, might know where some of these are. They were smaller pieces.
Right.
And it's just, theft is wrong. They were stolen from me.
Yeah, you're not kidding. Theft is wrong.
That's it. And I would very much like to have them back for a variety of reasons. And I'll get them out. I've got scans of them, and I'll put them up, and we'll see.
Yeah, I'm sure your viewers, listeners, whatever you want to say, they'll find them very interesting. When I used to go over to visit my friend Manfred Roeder, who was the third Fuhrer of the old Third Reich, the room they gave me had an original Hitler painting hanging in it.
Yeah. He's very good. I didn't have a big one. These were small. The biggest one I had was about 8.5 by 11, something like that.
Yeah.
Mostly 4 by 6. Little cards he did sitting in the cafes, after the war and trying to make a living.
Yeah. Interesting time in history.
Fascinating time.
Yeah. And for those of us who lived through some of it, not something you want to relive.
No. Another thing, if you try to find information on the Bolshevik attempt to capture Europe, and especially Germany, after the Treaty of Versailles and World War I, the Weimar Republic, you can't find much information on the Internet.
Yeah.
It has been removed. It's not there. There should be a bunch of it, but there's not much there. So if you want to learn about Weimar Germany, you have to go independent and look for books that were written about it from Amazon or libraries. There should be a whole ton of it online, but there's not. So.
Yeah, funny how that happens. We have a free and open society, except there's pretty strong censorship. Ah, well, what can I say?
you can say Entenmann's, the magic word. I used to eat Entenmann's. I did.
I still do.
Yeah, well, that's what fuels you.
Yeah, that's right. And every time I go in for my quarterly physical, my doctor starts screaming, "Your blood sugar's too high." Yeah, well, but I eat all them Entenmann's cupcakes and Entenmann's cookies and stuff. And we know where you're going because Charlie Entenmann is a member of Shark Hunters for, 15 years,
wonderful.
I think.
Wonderful. He's made so much happen, and we're all grateful for Charlie's participation.
Yeah, behind the scenes, he helps out a lot that he doesn't even want known.
Right.
We just call him our angel. There's another one, too, Jack Goodyear. There's another one. Those two guys, if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't get any research done at all. They're both very wealthy people, and when we need to put a major expedition together, we can always count on those guys. Our other members, too, I'm going down to Argentina again shortly, and the book Hitler in Argentina, we offer a limited number in hardback. You've got one of them. A limited number in hardback if anybody wants to donate $150, which is tax deductible because we have a legally constituted 501c3 nonprofit corporation. So if people donate $150, they get one of the books. We still have a handful of...
I'm concerned because I can't find hide nor hair of a hardback copy. I don't think it got here. I'm serious. I don't think it caught. I don't think it made it. I'd have it. I mean, it is sitting right in full view. I don't have it.
I'm sure I sent you one, but remind me, you know, not right now, but remind me at another time.
Sure.
To look for it. And
maybe you signed it and put it away and it didn't get mail. I don't know, but I know I'd have it.
No, I didn't put it away. I gave it to be sent out.
Mm.
Let me see if you're on the list here. Dum-dum-dum-dum. Rents. Where the heck are you? Oh, these computers are something else.
Oh, yeah. So, okay.
There you are. Copy number 100 was sent to you.
Uh-huh.
On the 27th of November.
Wow. All right. Well, I shall look again.
Okay. So anyhow, if anybody wants to donate $150 or more, we will send them a hard copy, hand-signed and numbered. That there's only 200 of them made.
Uh-huh.
And also one of the copies of the DVD that we made, Hitler's Escape to Argentina, they get one of those, and also a nice certificate that most of the people have framed and put up on their wall, a certificate saying that they helped us. So that's how we raise the money for
Wonderful.
Our expeditions.
Yeah. Okay, give us again the next available expedition that people can sign up for.
That would be September, 2 weeks, Southern Patrol.
Mm-hmm.
The total price is $3,200-something, but Shark Hunter members and their guests knock off $200. And we meet in Munich at our host hotel. We spend a few days touring Munich. Then we go up to Nuremberg. And we go places anybody can go, like on the stadium at Zeppelinfeld where Hitler stood to make those speeches on that huge big, stadium, that tribune or whatever you want to call it. But, and anybody can go there and we do too. But inside that thing, unless it's starting to fall apart, they're worried about its, safety. But we go, there's a sign that says Eingang verboten. And we know that means shark hunters are welcome here.
You bet.
And we go inside. That's the famous Golden Room with the all the designs, including swastikas, all inlaid in the ceiling in gold. And Hitler used to have receptions in there. And so we go in there. And one or two flights up are his private offices. We go in there. There's nothing left anymore. It's just empty rooms. And we also have lunch at what's called Hitler's train station. This is the railroad station behind that big stadium where he used to come in on the train. He'd go in the back door.
Mm-hmm.
While there were hundreds of thousands of people out front waiting for him, and he always managed to be fashionably late. So we go there, and we go to various other places. Most people don't know there's a gigantic tunnel bunker system underneath Nuremberg. We go in there too. Fortunately, one of our members is the assistant to the Lord Mayor there, so he's got keys to everything. Then from there we go down to southern Austria, and we do some sightseeing there. We spend a day in Salzburg where people can do their souvenir shopping, and there's plenty of stuff for the ladies to do as well. It's not just a bunch of old museums and stuff. A lot of excitement, a lot of fun. And then the Friday and the Saturday evening is a huge big fellowship dinner with hundreds and hundreds of veterans. Friday, I think it is. I don't have my schedule in front of me, but one of the days we go for a 3-hour boat ride.
Uh-huh.
And don't start singing on a 3-hour tour, you know, on the SS Minnow with Gilligan.
Mm.
Now we go around this beautiful lake called the Werthersee on a boat that was built before my parents were born.
Mm.
And it's steam powered.
Oh, how fun. Yeah.
The Saturday, we are guest of honor at their Navy League, the Verband Deutscher, no, the Austrian, the Marina Kameradschaft, that's the word I'm looking for, were the guests of honor there with a bunch more veterans, mostly Navy veterans. We have wurst and coffee and beer everywhere. Then the Sunday is the memorial up on the mountain, and it's just incredible. Your people can go to our website, sharkhunters.com, and go to previous tours, and they'll see all sorts of photos of these places. Then we leave there and go to Berchtesgaden, which is a beautiful place. It's where Hitler had his house, the Berghof, and we see old memorial sites there, bunkers and tunnels. We go down deep into rooms underneath the ground. We take 3-hour boat ride on the Königssee. And, of course, one of the nights while we're in Munich, we go to the Oktoberfest, which
is pretty
neat.
Just a tour that doesn't get any better. Yeah. All right, Harry, thank you. You get off and get some sleep now and get that cold vanquished. And
I got to have a little Irish whiskey. That'll help me.
Good. All right. Good man. Okay, my friend. You take care.
Thanks, Jeff. All the best to you, pal.
Okay. Talk
Bye-bye.
To you. Harry Cooper, sharkhunters.com, and we'll be back.